From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk grammar groaners. We can twist ourselves in knots trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong. We'll try to do some untwisting. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi there, Ross. Hi, Kathy. We here on the show really like to talk about things that are annoying, which is strange to want to do that. But that is, I guess, part of the fun of language. And so today we're talking about some pesky grammar groaners, is the way you described it to
me. Yes, yes.
So I can only assume we're going to get a little bit annoyed.
Yes, we will.
Us? Never. Come on.
But first, Fletcher, I put this up. Kathy is not interested in this. So she said,
no, I'm not. That's why I'm sorry. But okay. Ross is really, I'm not disinterested. I'm just not.
Yeah, this is where last week we did homophones, antonyms, etc. This is like shades of meaning. And I never knew the difference between these words, according to the insurance industry, which is probably completely useless. But I just sort of interested me in a minor case. Do you know the difference, according to the insurance industry? And I looked it up in Canada, the States, and all of these insurance people get really vehement about the difference. What's the difference between vacant and unoccupied?
Ooh.
I didn't know people would make a difference.
Wow.
It's actually, Russ, I gotta give you credit. It is interesting. I was just being a snot because I'm a little sister.
You're my little sister.
Okay.
Yes.
Unoccupied. I'm gonna make this up completely. Unoccupied means nobody lives there. Vacant means it was abandoned.
You're
pretty
not correct.
Close.
No, he's it's, not. I'm sorry.
It's kind of close. The theory, usually, though, Ross, I think the impulse.
Usually
is
Kathy
there.
Is the one who says, no, you're totally wrong, and Ross says, you're
know,
a little
Kathy
bit
Kathy always says, I'm totally wrong. I know. In this case, I'm going to go back to Kathy. I was really interested because there are distinct differences according to the insurance industry, and these are like really rock solid definitions. Apparently, I'm going to get a call from an insurance agent tomorrow and say you're wrong. But okay, let's go unoccupied first. In order for a home to be deemed unoccupied and not vacant, enough items must be left behind to support an individual's everyday living. This means furniture, functioning appliances, and cooking utensils.
Oh.
Vacant means the absence of that.
It's really empty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Vacant, nothing in it, unoccupied. But this makes sense, though, because unoccupied means house there, stuff there, I'm not there. Vacant means nothing there. It's that simple.
Yeah, I didn't know it then.
No, I certainly didn't, obviously. And I never would have guessed that at all.
Well, do you want to hear the real kicker? A building with more than, you know, like not a home, is considered vacant unless it has 31% of its total square footage is occupied.
Really?
And the operations conducted must be in accordance with building use. Now, this all sounds kind of like, you know, getting a little bit, you know, over much about it. But this is the really interesting thing about language. I mean, because I use the word vacant, and I'm sure I've used unoccupied and vacant, and I did not know these specific usages and specific differences. And language, in effect, is almost infinite in that way, which always really interests me. There are all these words that we use that certain people in certain industries in certain ways look at them and they think of them in very different ways.
Yeah, if I was talking to somebody about a vacant building and I didn't know they were an insurance agent, they could be hearing a very different thing from what I intended to say.
Yeah, and the key thing is not insurance, it's everything. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We talk about it, just different registers, different this, I mean, like different contexts. And so, I mean, context is king, ultimately. I mean, and your group lexicon, if you will, is not the same as the broader lexicon at all. It really isn't.
No.
It's different animals.
Yeah. This is the case with all language all the time. We're all, we share a lot of things together, but there are a lot of things we look at differently and we hear differently.
And that's the dangerous thing, though, because we think we're saying the same thing. We think we're using the same words, and you understand it like I do.
Exactly.
But you, Mr. Insurance Man, is like, listen, me say it's unoccupied, and they're going, oh, well, yeah, but there's a fridge in there.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to do next time, Butcher, we're going to bring in several insurance agents.
I get about 27 calls from insurance agents a day because somehow I got put on the list.
Yeah. That's right. Fletcher, you moved into a new house. It's insurance time. Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
Last week, we talked a little bit about food, sort of. We talked about different words for people who love food and eating and knowing about food. One of the words that we brought up was foodie, and I expect that got a big reaction from a lot of you, but the first one to get into us was Tim from NYC.
Yeah, Tim really didn't like it at all, did he, Ross?
No, he didn't.
He wrote, sorry, I'm going to have to side with those who don't like the term foodie. I think it's infantilizing as opposed to tantalizing. We don't call a book lover a bookie or a film buff a filmy or a sports fan a sporty. The Germanic side of our language is great at creating descriptive phrases. So food lover or food buff or food nut all work for me. I do use foodie pejoratively, as in the foodies are buying up all the quinoa.
That's a great
line. Tim's got a real knack on this one, I gotta tell you. Go,
read
Tim.
The last line, though, I love the best.
Yeah, I know you like this. He said, on the other side, I think gourmand is pretentious and, as you said, ambiguous in its meaning. Glutton is a great word, and of course, there's always pig.
Indeed.
But it was really interesting, because when Tim wrote that, we looked at it, and at first, we were both inclined to kind of go, yeah, you're right, it is infantilizing. Then, I think leading from bookie, we started thinking about it. And first of all, a book lover is not a bookie, but we very confidently will call someone, when you're placing a bet, a bookie. Mm-hmm. And that began us thinking about other diminutives of IE or Y that aren't infantilizing at all. I mean, go to a race course and you'll talk to a jockey. Then mm-hmm. you'll make a bet with a bookie. And then from a Canadian perspective, we also wrote to Tim when Binnington backstopped Canada on that big victory in Feb. He was a goalie, which we don't, I mean, you could also say goaltender, goalkeeper, but goalie is a very common word. You don't think of that as infantilizing.
And caddy in golfing.
Precisely.
Baby. That was the one Ross came up with, and I thought that was brilliant.
It comes from babe.
Yes, although infantilizing, I would say.
That's true. But we were thinking about it, but so I don't think it's, we both think that very confidently that foodie is going to go the way of goalie, etc., where it's generally accepted.
Yeah, but you did say specifically that there's a lot of controversy over all of those words, but foodie particularly. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of battles on food forums and that sort of thing about whether people ought to use the word mm-hmm. or ought not to use the word.
This
kind of just illustrates that.
Yeah, but it is interesting because at first we both thought, yeah, it's pretty much all of those diminutives, except for names, obviously. Kathy. Or Catherine or whatever. Yeah. But we thought that it was pretty much, we didn't think really. And then suddenly we realized there are words that are, you know, basically in general use. Mm-hmm. Although goalie is sort of, I mean.
Oh, no. Very common.
No,
you say goalie. People say goalie
say
all the
goalie.
Time. Yeah.
Oh, they
you
do all
goalie.
The time. But I'm saying, like, if you're writing some sort of, like, tax form for, you know, people who are playing hockey, you're going to write goalie.
Deduction, fake teeth. Yeah, but I mean, I agree. Because I think these words are ones that, I mean, the ones we're talking about, like bookie or goalie or jockey, are so regularly, you don't say jock. I mean, you do about a jock as in like an athlete.
Oh, jockey is really.
You don't call a horse rider anything but a jockey.
No, to go back to our tax form, you're going to say, I'm a racehorse jockey.
Yes.
On the tax form.
I mean, you probably do, right? If that's what you do, that's probably what you write.
Yeah.
Isn't that
exactly.
odd? Yeah, I never thought of that. People, what they write on their tax forms. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. None of this tax form.
Write,
I don't know
you
what
don't usually write bookie, though.
No, I don't think you do.
Okay. So we're done with foodie.
Yep.
Forever.
Yeah, that's right. And thank you for the quinoa line. Okay, should we move on?
We got an email from Jim. Hi, guys. prior to your recent discussion of short-lived or short-lived, I've never connected the dots and realized it was derived from life, the noun. But now it makes perfect sense. But as I think more about the F2V change, I've started to wonder about another adjective derived from a noun. Do you say a leafed plant or a leaved plant? Green leafed or green leaved? Cheers, Jim.
Part of that I've never thought about, because I would probably just say a plant with leaves. I would never refer to a leaved plant. But green leafed, I would probably say leaved.
Kathy, I think you should weigh in, because Kathy's husband is a plant guy.
Yeah.
I did ask him. He immediately said leaved was the one you usually use as a plant person. Mm-hmm. You usually say it's green leaved.
Huh, okay.
You do not say green leafed, which is the norm. I mean, leaved is older than leafed. Leafed is used, though. I mean, it's definitely used, and it's definitely not incorrect. It's just that it's not as popular as leaved.
So it does follow that what we were talking about before in Old English, the F would change to V between two vowels. So the other day when I was leaving through a book, I noticed that.
Were you leaving through a book?
English is capricious. It always is.
I think we need shirts that say that, because I don't know how many times we've said this during the show.
I know.
It is.
Okay. So we've finished leaving through the book, and now we're on to pet peeves. Kath, you want to read our biggie pet peeve of the day?
This is from Amy, and we don't know where Amy was from. Amy, we don't know where you're from, but we're sure it's a wonderful place. We hope it's a wonderful place. She said, quick question. I'd love to hear you weigh in. What's the difference between which is much more cranky,
good,
with none is versus none are?
Oh, boy.
I've heard none is technically singular, but none are just sounds right most of the time. Am I wrong? I just love this. Or just hopelessly modern? Would love to hear your take, mostly so I can win an argument and sound smart doing it. So, none is versus none are.
Yeah. Fletcher, do you have an opinion on this?
Usually when I am writing something, I would probably say, like, none of them is. But I do absolutely want to admit that none of them are sounds better.
Well, Fletcher, it does sound better in many cases. And in that case, neither you nor I nor Kathy are hopelessly modern. You're just grammatically correct instead.
Yay!
Do you guys say is? Do you say is also?
I say is and I say are, and we can say both.
Oh, okay.
At the basic level, of course, none means sounds like it means not one of something.
Uh-huh.
None of the members is going. None of the members of you're saying it wrong is ever wrong. Okay? But none is not a collective noun. None is called an indefinite pronoun.
Pronoun, correct.
It can be not one, but can also be not any. Okay? So any can imply a plurality.
The plural verb, when you want to do the are or the were or the collective, is three people were on the panel. None of them were women. You wouldn't say none of them is women or
right. Was.
Was women.
But let's look at another pair. None of the books is worth reading. None of these books are worth reading. Okay, which sounds right to you?
They both sound
none
fine.
None of the books is worth reading sounds a little better, but they're both fine, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they both sound fine to me.
They're both completely fine. In this case, what we're talking about basically is none, you know, we just said it earlier, none can be basically be either way. It depends on what you feel works better for you. Are, to me, unlike you, Fletcher, which is really interesting, my default usually is are. What's your default,
really?
Kath?
I'm just saying, give me an example so I can think in my head. None of us is going to the meeting. None of us are going to the meeting. None of us are going to the meeting.
Yeah.
I would say none of us are going.
Oh,
no.
Funny.
So you're,
none
yeah,
of us
none
are
of
going.
Us. So you're an R defaulter.
Yeah.
Fletcher is
totally
an is defaulter.
Can you explain that again? I think this might go to that misunderstanding about what none is. You said it's
okay.
Not a collective noun.
No, it's called an indefinite pronoun. It basically pinch hits for a noun, okay? And it could be not one.
Or not any. That, to me, is the key, what you said, Ross. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay.
So it could be either one. Collective nouns are basically like the family is going.
Yeah.
The group is going.
The you're baseball saying it team wrong. Is bad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about both? Both is or both are?
Both are.
How many things is both? It refers to two.
Two.
So it's plural.
Yeah.
Right. So it's so that's, both are.
It's a collective noun.
Well, that's my question. Is it? If it's a collective noun, would you be saying is or would you be saying are?
Both is a refers to more than one, so both are.
Yeah. So, but wait a second, because a collective noun, a team is.
But both is a pronoun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't both it? Is not a collective noun. Both is a pronoun.
No, it's not. It's a pronoun.
It's a pronoun.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So both would be a pronoun, and it's a pronoun that refers to two.
Yeah.
It's not a collective noun of things like team, group.
Yeah.
Family.
Both of them are. Yeah. Okay. That seems right.
Yeah,
both
it's a pronoun.
Yeah.
So we've solved that. None of us is or none of us are hopelessly modern when we say they can be both.
Amy, so don't worry. You're doing fine. Keep listening. We make sense a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Although it's weird, though, because there's certain things that sound wrong, even though they are, mm-hmm. they is correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry. Collective now, they. No, I'm sorry. I'm joking.
Kathy's just joking, people. Don't.
Kidding. Yeah. But I loved this, and it's one of these things, and it was an old ad for Alfred Hitchcock's movie, The Birds. And it said, "The birds is coming," which is right.
Right, yes.
But it's just, it's one of those things where you just go like, "Brr," for a second.
I know. Okay, moving along. We got an email with a few pet peeves from Jim in Missouri. And here is one. Actually, I'm always curious. Do they pronounce it Missouri, or is that just a fake thing?
No, that's real.
I would always
that's
just
real.
Say Missouri.
That's real.
They do say Missouri?
Some people.
They do?
Yeah, but I don't think that if you're not from there, you should say
that. Oh, I would
that.
Never say Missouri. Yeah, I mean, No. I think you have to live there.
You know, I think it's even regional within the state, and it's also regional within this state of Kansas that I live in. There are some people in Kansas who do say Missouri, and there are some people in Kansas who say Missouri, so... I think it's just a depends on where you live within and who knows, maybe I'm even wrong about that, but they say both. Yeah,
but you say Missouri, don't you?
I do, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
anyway, Jim from Missouri, or Missouri depending on his own pronunciation, said a call for pet peeves. How could I possibly pass up an opportunity to have a fit about grammar or usage that drives me insane? And then he led off with a list, and his one of them was this: these ones or those ones. That's a pet peeve.
Either one. Yeah. These ones over here.
Yes.
Yeah. Or those ones over there.
Okay. We have two questions. We have two questions here for you, Fletcher. One, is this a reasonable pet peeve in your opinion? And two, is this a grammatically correct or incorrect formation?
Is it a reasonable pet peeve? Let me say, Jim, I get it. But it also
you're kinda, a diplomat.
It also kind of just sounds like colloquial, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't get too personally bothered by it. Is it grammatically is it grammatically correct? I think it sounds unnecessary.
Ooh, good word.
Yeah, I don't know that it would be grammatically incorrect. It just doesn't sound like you really need it. Like, you can just say those are these, right? But if you and I think maybe we've talked about pluralizing one before, which also seems silly, mm-hmm. but is okay to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you could say, like, those graham crackers over there. I have small children. Those graham crackers over there, or these graham crackers over here. Those ones, the ones is standing in for graham crackers in that case.
Mm-hmm.
How close am I?
It's redundant and not generally recommended that one be, you know, one use that in, like, you know, formal speech. But it's interesting too with your graham cracker statement. I think is a really cogent example of where ones kind of works pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Those over there doesn't have the same feeling as those ones over there. What do you got? I mean, don't you? I'm serious.
Well, I think I think it depends on the specificity. I mean, like, are those graham crackers over there specific? Like, are they different graham crackers?
But
or
I think
are we just saying, like, there's like a stack of graham crackers here and there's a stack there?
Yeah,
I'm going to go with graham cracker generality here. I think it works in graham cracker world, as we're saying, I think it works great with little kids. Those ones over there, little kids, the ones for you.
Yeah.
I think it really, I think that, and I think, you know, with little kids, as Fletcher well knows, it's best to be redundant as much as possible, just to make sure it gets into the head.
And not into the carpet.
I think we call this the graham cracker rule of those ones. Not generally acceptable in written speech, but okay in spoken when you need to.
Okay, now I want to interject. First of all, Jim, we hate to break it to you. We're actually saying these ones or those ones, which you decry horribly, are actually A-okay. I mean, as Ross said, not necessarily preferred, but fine. Secondly, those ones and these ones are more hated in American English than in British English.
That's interesting.
Which is odd, because normally we have the opposite. Normally it's, oh, those silly Americans being so, you know, casual. But no, in this case, the Brits are much more open to these ones or those ones.
Do you want to know the grammatical trick as to why it's okay in grammar, Fletcher?
Absolutely.
Or is that going to be too boring?
No, let's do it.
Okay. We were talking about pronouns. Those and these are pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fine. I prefer those. Remember, it's pinch hitting for, in this case, graham crackers, right?
Right.
I prefer these. No, I prefer graham crackers. Pointing to the graham crackers. Those ones, these no longer works as a pronoun. What does it become?
An adjective.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. Do you want these graham crackers, to use Kathy's graham cracker point earlier, which was very brilliant because she's making a distinction. Do you want these graham crackers or those graham crackers?
Mm-hmm.
Both are adjectives. I think we should write a book, The Graham Cracker Way of Looking at the
Grammar. I think we're onto something huge. Maybe we could even make it about like quantum mechanics. No?
Yeah. So you can see why it's grammatically correct. It may not be, you know, the most elegant English, and I would not recommend using it for, you know, a technical paper or a thesis or whatever, but it's fine. Although, in fairness, do you really? I don't think it kind of grates on me in a way.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. I'm totally with Jim. It's a pet peeve. I think it's fine and it's correct, but I don't care for
it. I'm not wild about it either.
That's kind of what I said, I guess, at the beginning. Like, Jim, I get it. You know, I definitely get where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like I said, it feels just like uber casual or colloquial even. And so, I mean, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it, it doesn't drive me nuts. Yeah. But I would never say, I'm thinking these ones or those ones I could do, whereas ones is the whatever. But normally I would say, yes, I prefer these.
Yeah.
I don't think I would say I prefer these ones.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever said that, in fact. No.
Mm-mm.
So, okay, Jim, we're still on your side, okay, baby? <You know? laughs>
Okay, we're moving on to another pet peeve the person is peeved about, which is the confusion. So it's like sort of a quasi-pet peeve, then, is my favorite word of the day. He is taller than I, or he is taller than me. What's with than I and than me?
Oh,
it's really getting to me.
Yeah.
Well, it gets to me, too. And that one, I remember on the SATs years ago, I was ready to scream about. Which is correct?
He is taller than I am. So I guess I.
Ah. So can you ever go, okay, now let's move on here now. Let's look at this a little bit theory here. I'm going to say two sentences.
Well, okay, so like, he is taller than her. I would say, I mean, I would even say he is taller than me, whatever, I don't care. But
yeah.
He is taller than her. sounds more normal than he is taller than she.
This is interesting, Fletcher. This is exactly
because we talked about this at length. This is a fun one to me. Okay, go on. To I. Sorry.
that's cool. We should really do the hyper corrections with eyes. But that idea of the they and I, Kathy can go into that. But let's look at two sentences, and then Kathy, you should go back into that I thing. You know, then I am, as Fletcher said.
Mm.
He likes her more than me. He likes her more than I.
Those definitely sound like they mean two different things.
You got it, Fletcher.
Aha!
Yes.
Fletcher wins again.
He likes her more than me would, to me, mean he prefers her over me.
I have no idea why either.
He likes her more than I would mean he likes her more than I like her.
Correct.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Excellent.
There's definitely a distinct difference, and you nailed it.
Okay, Kath, do you want to go to the conjunction theory?
Well, that's the whole thing. Well, we go back to the whole thing with the I versus me. The conjunction theory, we've talked about Louth in the past, have we not?
Yes.
Yes,
yeah,
he was an irritating
guy. Yeah.
Many of them were, Ross.
Yes.
One day we too could be irritating.
Those Petruses, they were irritating.
Right. We need to just come out with some like pronouncements. Anyway, he said that the whole conjunction theory is a conjunction introduces a new clause with his own subject. So he can walk faster than I can walk.
Uh-huh.
So you can get rid of the can walk and say he can walk faster than I. So you wouldn't do then the me ends up not being in there because of the whole clause with the new subject, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then, Ross, do you want to go to the preposition?
Sure, we have then. But then some people have countered. And actually, Fletcher, I grew up basically thinking you never say than me. It's always than I. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you – do you have that?
I have the than me more than you do.
Hmm.
I'm a me girl.
Well, I think Mom...
I'm a preposition theory girl.
Mom drilled the than I into my head.
And I didn't listen.
And then I had SATs and I was like, wait a minute now. And I get all upset, but whatever. The preposition theory basically counters Louth and says, yes, you're right sometimes. But other times, as you know, Fletcher masterfully showed us, it can serve as a preposition, and then it takes the, it's an object. We had the hit me before with that. where the verb basically does something else. And in that case, he likes her more than, he likes her more than me. He likes me. So therefore it's an object and it becomes me, not I.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be both. And as Fletcher demonstrated when we did those sentences, we have two cases where it means two different things, and in both cases, they're grammatically correct. So Mr. Louth overdid this conjunction theory of than I.
Yeah.
But Mr. Louth died in 1787, so we don't have to worry about
him. So we don't even have to care about him. And presumably he's not listening, and if he is, sorry, baby.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.